Welcome back, everybody, to a Friday edition of the program. Along with Adrian Broaddus, I'm Steve Kaplowitz. Is that Alicia that's in the background? Very nice. Welcome back, Alicia.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Good to see you. We got a good show today. It's going to be a lot of fun. Can't wait. Went to Luby's today on North Mesa. My God, that place was packed. And wouldn't you know it? You know, a place closes on Sunday, and now all of El Paso wants to say they've had one last meal at Luby's. Hey, by the way, just to let everybody know, they're still going to be open on Hawkins, all right? It's not like Luby's in El Paso is going out forever, but this place has been iconic. Like, I've been going to Luby's since I was a kid. I mean, I feel like I've been eating there since the late 70s, early 80s, and, you know, I mean, 40-plus years, and it's now going to be whatever it's turning into. It's a little nostalgic for a lot of us, you know?
Yeah, Steve, I'm happy you went as it's closing down. That one has a special place in my heart, at least for me. It's where I feel like I grew up. Like, yeah. I feel like I had weekly lunches at Luby's with my family, and all my family's, like, trying to get out there for at Luby's through these last couple weeks. And I'm thinking to myself the same thing that you are. Like, hey, we could always go on the Hawkins side of things, but I'm happy you got a chance to go. Was it as packed as your photo actually looked?
Yes.
Like, was the wait pretty long too?
Yes.
Wow.
By the way, that photo was taken at like 11:30.
What? So this is early.
Oh,
like, this is the
yeah.
early crew.
Well, look
wow.
at who goes to Luby's.
Yeah, I get you.
Understand.
Yeah, it's the 60 and up. But hey, it's the great 60 and up.
But when I left, it was just as packed as when I arrived. Then again, we left around 1 o'clock. We stuck around for a while.
Nice. You know. Okay.
So. But food was great. Enjoyed it.
Pie as well? Dessert?
It's Passover.
Oh, that's right. Sorry.
No.
Yeah, I got you.
That was the hardest part for me was if you try to keep like the Passover diet a little bit, like what do you eat?
Yeah,
so,
it's tough. I'm sorry.
You know, the whole idea with Passover, folks, for those of you that don't know, is what we celebrate is when Moses took the Israelites out of Egypt. You know, and they were slaves. They crossed the Dead Sea, and it parted for them. Everybody's heard the Old Testament story, and if you think about it, you know, the Last Supper. Since we're right, this is Easter weekend, and today's Good Friday. The Last Supper was a Passover Seder. That's exactly what it was. So same time of year, same everything. But back to the story. So you're not supposed to eat leavened bread. Okay, that's the whole idea. So you eat matzah, which is unleavened bread, and you're not supposed to eat, you know, breadcrumbs or noodles or macaroni and all this stuff. So my favorite fish dish there is the baked fish almondine. I love that. It's my favorite, but it's got breadcrumbs. So I got that fish dish that's got the like the tartar sauce topping, you know, the one that they bake on top of that.
Lemon.
Yeah, and whatever. I ate that. That was my lunch. It was some mashed potatoes, and they had some really, really good vegetables. They were on their game today, so I was very happy. I got the vegetable intake, and you know, it worked out. It worked out very good. Let's just put it that way.
So they're closing it out on top. So this
yes.
This Luby's is going out on top. I'm sad that this one specifically near us is closing by UTEP, but happy that Luby's is staying in El Paso. We just have to drive a little east now.
That's all we got to do. It's not that big a deal. I mean, it can, you know, it's something we'll take care of. Fried okra is the greatest, but couldn't have that. So that was at least not this trip. And when I go to Hawkins, I will. I'll unload on their fried okra because I'm a big fan of that. And I do think that, and I don't want to know what's in those fish fillets. I have no interest to know really what that is because I'm sure it's probably going to disappoint me when I find out. But, man, it's Luby's.
Steve, I got to put Alicia on the spot. She's never been to Luby's.
How long have you lived in El Paso?
21 years.
Oh, my God.
Okay, but I'm from the east side.
So they have it on Hawkins.
But I'm way east, like past 375.
Can you make the trip?
I can, but I've never been.
Okay. Well, you might need to.
Okay.
You might need to.
What's your order? What do I need to get?
Oh, just get the, first of all, I was just telling you, get the baked fish almondine. It's delicious. You like tartar sauce?
Not a fan.
No?
No, not really.
All right, then stay away from the fish and go for something else. I like their, you know, that's always been my big thing there. But they have good
chicken.
Good chicken, good meatloaf. I know they do pork chops on occasion, steak. I mean, it's a cafeteria, Alicia. It's cafeteria food is what it is.
Okay, maybe I'll try the one on Hawkins then.
Well, first off, when you leave the show today, just stop up there for dinner. Have a quick bite to eat, and you can get in and out in about 30, 45 minutes, and you'll have a chance to say that you were there. You took your first ever trip to Luby's on North Mesa before it closes on Sunday.
Oh, it closes on Sunday?
Yes.
Ooh, maybe.
There you go.
That'll be my first Luby's experience.
Yeah, it could be, you know, and think about it. It'd be historic. So that's right. Adrian, what's your go-to at Luby's?
I'll go with, like, if they ever have kind of like the thinly sliced, like, turkey or mm-hmm. something like that, or the ham, one of the two, I'll go chicken if not, and then mashed potatoes. I love the side of mashed potatoes. Wife is a big fan of the mac and cheese, so sometimes I'll take a good bite of that.
Very nice. Did you do the, brown or white gravy on the mashed potatoes?
Oh, it's the brown gravy.
That's what I did today, too.
Definitely.
I did mashed potatoes with the brown gravy.
Yeah, it hurts the heart, but it's very good. I like it a lot.
Well, I mean, listen, you're eating mashed potatoes. There's probably enough butter and everything else to put in that thing. It's not exactly heart healthy, but you got to have it, right? Got to have it at least once before. Are you a big fried okra guy?
Yeah, I love it, man. I'm a big fried okra guy. So, and I like the ones at Luby's. So I'm bummed that I'm not going to get a chance to try this one here at UTEP, this location.
They had Brussels sprouts today.
Ooh,
and
nice.
I destroyed the Brussels sprouts. That was a big win for me because, you know, I'm the okra. That's what I want. I want okra, but because I couldn't have okra today, I saw the Brussels sprouts. I said, let's go for the Brussels. I never had those before there, and they had them salted a little bit nice, and I don't know. They were good. They were just right. So they, you know, you had those, and it was perfect.
Somebody's going to tell us over the weekend that they chose to make their Easter weekend or one meal out of their Easter weekend at Luby's because of this conversation. So
that could very well be the case. Look, the Passover diet for me, I'm hoping to shed 5 pounds at least. That's the goal. All right, because no bread, so you don't, and no pasta. You try to stay away from all that stuff, and you try to eat a lot of salad. You might have some seafood, some fish. You can eat, you know, meat, but no bread. So you'd be amazed what that will do for you diet wise if you stay to that for about 7-8 days. Yeah, it's pretty good. So that's the plan. And I went on the scales a couple days ago. I was not happy with myself. I was upset. Said that total has to go down. So let's see what happens. This is the annual Passover diet. I hope it works for me.
Nice, Steve. I'm rooting for you. I like this. I find that the Passover diet and the Passover fasting are just kind of getting away from those kind of foods right there. It's excluding you from that. It's solid. So I like it.
It's true. Now you still eat carbs because you can eat matzah. But that's not exactly the I don't go crazy on that stuff. Let's put it that way. I don't. All right. Good start to the show. And by the way, just for those of you wondering, Trader Joe's started selling matzah this year, and we hit Trader Joe's in last month when we were at spring training. Picked up a box. Impressed,
really?
Actually. Yes.
That's good to know.
I was impressed. Look, I'm a big, big fan of TJ's. Big fan of TJ's. It is a must visit every time we go to a city that has one. We go in there. I will say that I'm getting annoyed with them because they seem to have a habit of discontinuing my favorite food items now, which is it's becoming more and more apparent every year. I'm not happy about that, you know? First, it was the chocolate JoJo's, then it was the nacho chips, and now it's the potato chips that they're doing and some of the other things. Not happy, but there's enough of a variety where it keeps you good. It does.
You know, the Trader Joe's version of Takis, that's my go-to, man. When we tried it recently in February, that was the first bag I got. I'm hooked on those.
Are you really?
Alyssa went out to Trader Joe's not too long ago, about like a, you know, like a couple weeks ago when she was in Austin.
Yep.
And she grabbed a couple bags. Those are solid.
That's what do you dip it in?
Oh, nothing.
You just
like
eat the
that.
Takis straight.
Just Takis straight like that. Right. Yeah.
Their version of the Takis.
Yeah, they're like chili lime, whatever they are. They're
that
really
sounds,
good.
That sounds good. Alicia, you ever been to a Trader Joe's? Or you haven't done that one either.
Haven't done that one either.
All right. Well, you know, it's you've got a lot to learn, Alicia. It's you know, it sounds to me like there's a lot of places you have to visit around here. First, Luby's and Trader Joe's, and who knows what else will be there for you.
I'm already writing all this down.
Please. You ever been to an In-N-Out Burger?
Yes, I have.
All right. What do you think?
Not a fan.
All right.
Ooh, nice.
Boy, this is good.
Good.
Boy, Alicia, just dropping hot take after hot take with us the entire show so far. We just got started. It's going to be a good one, by the way. We've got Gilbert Burns joining us here, coming up in about, less than 10 minutes from now. He went one-on-one with Adrian to talk UFC. He's part of the big co-main event tomorrow night. It's a big, big UFC card, and you were able to spend some time with Gilbert. I'm looking forward to this conversation.
Yeah, I was really happy about this one. I'm really excited about the conversation coming up. Jorge Masvidal was also available, Steve, and for all the listeners out there, he got in an altercation ahead of his media event, like an actual physical altercation with another UFC fighter, Ron Holland, and as a result, he had to cancel. So that's why we didn't get a chance to speak with Jorge Masvidal, but instead we'll get his opponent in Gilbert Burns, which, by the way, one of the best welterweight fighters you're going to find in all of the UFC.
Oh, that's good. So I'm looking forward to that, too. And as far as Masvidal goes, maybe that'll make the matchup even better.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. He's very fiery. He's also told people that if he loses this one, he will call it quits. So
Jorge it's a retirement match.
Well, yeah, if he loses this one, he will. Burns is trying to fight to, you know, try to throw his name out there and get a championship title fight. And Pereira Adesanya, that's the headliner tomorrow. That one's for a belt, which should be a great one as well.
World middleweight championship on the line. It's actually a rematch between those two. So Adesanya and Pereira are going to go at it again, and then the one half of the Masvidal Burns. Now, did Masvidal get into it with Burns? Is that why he couldn't make his radio hit?
No, it was another fighter. His name is Ron Holland that he got into it with. So I guess, yeah, as a result of that, we didn't get a chance to speak with him. So, yeah, I guess when you get in these kind of altercations, then there's some ramifications that come with them.
If in fact... Masvidal does defeat Burns, is it possible we'll get Masvidal Holland next, or are they different weight classes?
So we could no, I think they're different weight. I'm not too sure, but I think they're different weight classes. I will say if Masvidal wins, he will try to get a title fight at that welterweight spot. And he's gonna say that he deserves it over Colby Covington. So between Burns, Covington, Masvidal, all three of them think they deserve a shot at the championship belt when it comes to the welterweight. So let's see who comes out on top tomorrow.
I like it. It sounds to me like there's a lot of drama. That's good. That's the way it should be, right?
Yeah, I agree. I like the UFC a lot right now. I think that there's a lot of great fighters. UFC 287 tomorrow should be really exciting. When I was out at Border City Ale House, they had a lot of different promotions for that one as well. So just want to mention, that's a great place to watch it if you're out there looking for a place here in town, Border City Ale House on the east side.
Our 5 o'clock hour is going to be a busy one, folks. We're going to have Andrew Forrest in at 5. They've got a big bucket hat giveaway tomorrow night when the club returns home. And then Kevin Baker will be calling in the next segment. So we'll have a chance to talk to the former UTEP women's basketball coach who resigned a few days ago, along with a Locomotive preview for their match here coming up tomorrow night. And then, as we mentioned, next up, we're going to talk a little UFC. Adrian is going to go one-on-one with Gilbert Burns. So going to be a good show. Excited about that. You want to weigh in? 505-6009. 600-ESPN El Paso on Twitter. You can also message us on our mobile app powered by First American Bank as we get ready for a Friday, busy Friday here on Sports Talk. Let's kick it off right. Charlie One will give us our first traffic update of our Friday commute. Charlie, how are we doing?
All right, welcome back to Sports Talk. Saturday at Miami-Dade Arena, it's UFC 287, and with us right now is Gilbert Burns as he prepares for his welterweight bout against Jorge Masvidal. Thank you so much for the time today, Gilbert. I can't wait. Everybody's pretty fired up about this one coming up on Saturday.
Yeah, me too. So do I. I think it's going to be a big fight. UFC 287, Jorge Masvidal at home. Excited. You know, a lot of friends coming, family. Teammates, it's going to be a good one. I've been preparing very hard for this fight. I'm thinking I'm on a great shape. The work has been done. Today we just got a press conference. Tomorrow we'll make the weight. Saturday we're going to fight, so excited.
I'm excited as well. And, you know, the talk of the whole week, Gilbert, is the fact that Jorge is going to bring all these fans in Miami because he's from the area and all of that. But what people don't realize is you train right in Miami as well, right outside the city. And you have a great Brazilian fan base in the city as well who will be showing up on Saturday. All the talk on Jorge Masvidal having the fans there, they can't forget about your fans who will be there on Saturday as well.
I love that. They yell a lot of fans here too. I'm going to have a lot of fans. And I'm looking forward to still that crowd. You know, as for sure they might be booing you in the beginning. It's all good. It don't matter. But as the fight is going, I think I'm going to be able to steal the crowd. And I'm looking forward to, you know, bro. Love Miami being here. September is going to make 10 years that I moved out of Brazil, that I'm here in South Florida. I lived first in Delray Beach. Now I'm Boca Raton. But yeah, 10 years. So I have a lot of friends here, a lot of fans here too. It's going to be a good one.
I can't wait. Hey, I want to ask you, the preparation leading into Saturday's fight, what was it like for you leading up to it, knowing that this one is so important for you?
It was great. You know, whenever we start preparation, we do all the plans. I talked to all the coaches, and it was great because it just came off a win in Brazil. So I had no injuries. I was in a great shape. And then we start, like, I was in not working and work slow to get to a hard camp. I was just fresh from the camp, no injuries. I rest down 2 weeks and then got to a camp. And I got super ready, you know. I think he got a great team behind me. And I got, even when I don't have sparring partners that can do the game from the guy, that wasn't the case. I have a lot of guys that can mimic George. I find another guy that can do it, that too, and then I bring this guy. I got to invest a lot on my camp, and then I did. And mentally, I'm in a great place right now. Physically, I'm in a great place right now, and just cannot wait for the fight. I think I'm being very well prepared. Big opportunity, co-main event, George Masvidal in Miami. Yeah, brother, I think I'm super prepared for that.
Well, you know what? I've just been so impressed by your career, Gilbert, because you're a multi-jiu-jitsu champion. You started in the lightweight ranks, and then you moved up to the welter ranks. What is it about the welterweight class specifically that you feel most confident in?
So I feel that's my winning vision. You know what? I don't need to cut a lot of weight. When I feel that my training it's translated to my performance. You know, I'm fighting the way I was training. So when I was a lightweight, I was doing everything super good, but I wasn't able to perform, you know. So at welterweight, I'm stronger. I'm feeling good. I'm very explosive. I can keep that gas tank for 3, 4, 5 rounds if I have to. And, yeah, I've been doing way better at welterweight, fought for the title, fought being a top 5 for years, and looking forward to get the goal is to become a champion. I think a victory over Masvidal is going to get me very close to it.
Why is that? Because that's been one of the big talking points leading up to this whole week. The fact that you, of course, want to be a champion. The opportunity to become a champion is what you're trying to reach right now. And it's not about winning in decision against Jorge Masvidal. It's kind of about destroying him and showing what you could do to the entire world to earn that title fight.
Exactly. That's the goal. The goal is to go out there, dominate, and finish and destroy Masvidal. That'll get me super close for a title. If I just go out there and win by decision, I don't think it will give me too much. But if I go out there and dominate him the beginning to the end and destroy him, get a beautiful finish, a submission or a knockout, yeah, that's going to get super close to a title shot.
Give me a scouting report on Jorge Masvidal. What is it about him that you have to prepare for on Saturday?
So he's very good in a lot of things. He's striking. He's underrated. He's very good. He's a boxer. That's how he started. Boxing, fighting on the streets. The guy has a high IQ for fighting. And then he got better on the kicks, on the knees, on the elbows. So he's excellent striking. His takedown defense is very good. And his grappling is underrated too. He's very good at grappling. I think he's overall very, very good fighter. I think I'm better on the grappling. I think my grappling is better. I think on the wrestling, offensive, I'm better, but defense, he's very good. And on striking, I think he's more slick. He got a little bit more things, but I got a lot more power. So, but the best thing, I think I can mix that better than he does. You know, I can do, you don't know whenever I'm going to strike, whenever I want to wrestle, whenever I want to take down, whenever I want to grapple. I think that's going to be the key. But he's very good everywhere, very well-rounded. 51 pro fights. Plus, I don't know how many street fights that he had, you know, the backyard. So the guy's a veteran, knows how to fight. He's a dog. I big respect to Masvidal, but sadly, it's not going to be a good night to beat Jorge Masvidal.
Hey, take me back to January 21st. You went up against Magny on that night, and it was an arm triangle choke in the first round that ended that fight. What was it about that fight that kind of propels you and kind of continues to motivate you moving forward going into this one right here?
Because Neil Magny was the guy that called me out. I've been trying to get a fight. It's very hard nowadays because a lot of guys, they don't want to take a fight. They don't want to risk. They have a position in the rank. If they fight a guy below you in the ranks, they lose the position. So everyone's kind of like holding on to the position, waiting for the perfect fight. And I'm not that guy, you know. I'm fighting anyone in the division. And it was great to get a win over Neil Magny. That was a guy that is a veteran. He has the record of most wins in our division, welterweight division. He holds the record. And I went out there. I didn't get one. I didn't get one significant strike on me, and I was able to go out there and finish him, didn't get touched, and just kind of like show everybody that I'm level above these guys, that I'm on a different level, that I'm fighting to become a champion, to go after that title. And that, 4 days after that result, I got a call to fight Masvidal. It was a great call because I changed my whole lifestyle. I'm super healthy right now, eating very good, having a good lifestyle. You know, all my lifestyle is to become a champion. So changing my sleep, changing my food, changing my diet, changing a lot of things on my lifestyle just to get a healthier lifestyle. And when they called me, I had those 2 weeks resting and got back to a camp. So I was already in a great shape. And started my camp like that. So I think I'm in a very good pace of mind right now. My body's good, mentally is good. I think I'm gonna do pretty well against George.
Gilbert, you know, you seem like a very level-headed person. On the contrary, your opponent in Jorge Masvidal went out today, and I know you've probably been asked a million of times, but he went out earlier this week and talked about how he possibly could call it quits if he loses this fight on Saturday. Interesting comments coming from him just leading into this one.
I think I don't see it with good eyes when any athlete, any fighter, when they start talking about retirement, you know, even though he didn't say, he kind of saying that he's on a different level, he shouldn't lose. If he loses, he retires. I don't know. I just that statement right there put a lot of pressure on him, you know. I don't know if he deals very good with the pressure. That's what I'm kind of thinking that he does. He kind of putting a lot of pressure on himself to come out crazy on Saturday, to come out stronger. I think that's the case. But whenever you talk about retirement, I don't think he's never good. You know, if you think about it, it's in your heart, it's in your mind. You know, we speak whatever's inside of us. So I think whenever he start talking about retirement, whenever I get in a position, in a movement, in the fight that I know he struggled, I'm going to make sure he remembers that he's thinking about retirement. I'm going to try to put a lot of more pressure on him. So, I just can't speak about me, you know. I cannot speak about George, but me, whenever I think that is the retirement, I'm going to call it and I'm done. I don't need to see if I'm going to do good or not. Whenever I start thinking on that, I'm done. But nowadays, I'm better than ever. I have a lot of energy. I want to train. When I wake up, looking forward to getting in the session, looking forward to have a great day. At night, I'm thinking, okay, tomorrow I'm going to do these. I'm going to leave everything ready to my training. So I think we're on a different level now, thinking about retirement.
I got two more for you, Gilbert. Quickly, I just want to ask for your quick thoughts on the middleweight title fight against Israel Adesanya versus Alex Pereira. What do you think about this one right there?
I think that's a very close fight. Adesanya looks very locked in. He looks like he's focused. That's his last chance. And Pereira is a monster too, from Brazil. That's a tough fight. I think it's going to be a 50-50 fight. I want Pereira to win, but I like Adesanya a lot too. I think Adesanya can get it done. Just because that guy got his number. He's putting so much more work. He studied everything. He has very high IQ. But I think Adesanya might get it done. You know, I think Adesanya might get it done. But very close fight.
Oh, I can't wait. Hey, it's UFC 287 coming up this Saturday with the co-main event, Gilbert Burns preparing for his welterweight bout against Jorge Masvidal. Final question for me. Do you feel confident knowing that you're the heavy favorite in this one, or do you not really even pay attention to that stuff and you just kind of pay attention to what you know internally to prepare for this one right here?
I don't pay attention on the odds. The odds makers, sometimes they do a good job, sometimes they're crazy. I don't know what they're thinking. But I don't pay attention. I just pay attention to things that I got to do, things that are on my control, things that I need to get done and do it 100% on my level to be there 100% that night. You know, there's still a lot of work to do. You think now the work's done, work's not done. I got press conference, I got weight cut, I got training. Tomorrow, finish the weight cut, you know, weigh-ins. A lot of things, get ready, visualization, rest, mobility, still a lot of things to get done, you know. So that's what I put all my energy on it and do everything in my power to get there in my zone, in my moment, and execute my best, have a great performance. That's what I'm thinking about. But the odd makers, the crowd, it is what it is.
Gilbert, thank you so much again. Kent, thank you enough for all the time today.
You're welcome, brother. Have a good one.
And Irving apparently has a right foot injury that he's recovering from. Hardaway's got left ankle soreness. Josh Green has just got rest. Maxi Kleber is right hamstring injury recovery. And then Christian Wood has rest. It makes you wonder. The NBA sucks. I'm not going to lie to you. The NBA absolutely sucks. This is an embarrassment. Listen. If you could play, you play. The idea that you want to sit players with two games left to go in the season because and they're on the outside looking in because of the possibility of recovery is get the whole offseason to recover. You try to get to the playoffs. I mean, it sends the worst message possible. And to me, it's why so many people now are turned off by the NBA. Who wants to watch a league when you've got teams doing this that's trying to make a playoff run?
Right. I would say that for me, at least, Steve, the NBA does not suck. It's the Dallas Mavericks in this decision. It really, really sucks. And it makes the NBA look bad. It's a bad reflection on the league. It really makes it look bad knowing that Luka Doncic is playing for the Dallas Mavericks and he is not going to probably be in the postseason knowing what they're going to roll out there tonight against the Chicago Bulls. I feel like this is embarrassing for Dallas, who, by the way, they traded Dorian Finney-Smith, Spencer Dinwiddie, and a 2029 unprotected pick to Brooklyn to acquire Kyrie Irving, and this has turned into an absolute disaster. They are hoping that they can get into the top 10 of the NBA draft. Mm-hmm. Remember, they mm-hmm. owe the New York Knicks a protected top 10 pick, so anything outside of the top 10, New York would then keep out of the Kristaps Porzingis trade. That's the last nugget left from that Kristaps Porzingis trade right there.
Listen, you could say the NBA doesn't suck, the Mavericks do. But the fact is this, they all do this. Now, the Mavs are doing it on a key stretch at the end of the season to try to avoid giving the Knicks a draft pick, okay? But the point is that these guys all do it. And I can't imagine playing a six-month NBA regular season only to have your organization tell you, we do not want to make the playoffs. The goal for every team should be to make the playoffs. And again, if this is the Mavericks and nobody else is doing it, hey, it's still a team in the NBA, and it's showing you right now They all rest players. Everybody is into this stupidity that is load management. And the fact that teams are now using this to try and get into the lottery is a joke. It's an absolute joke. And again, it's what's wrong with the sport. The NBA is a mess. They've got to fix it. And this kind of behavior cannot happen. And it's, I mean, imagine if you're a Mavericks fan. This is the team you root for, and you got to deal with this.
Yeah, it's very disappointing. If I was a Mavericks fan, I would be embarrassed of my team because this, to be honest, Steve, this isn't a call from Kyrie Irving and Christian Wood and Tim Hardaway Jr. This is their GM saying this. And Luka Doncic was probably told, hey, you're not going to play in this game, but he probably refused. He told reporters earlier last week that as long as the Mavericks were still in the playoff picture, he would be playing in every single game, as it should be. If you have a possibility to get to the postseason, even if you don't, be there for your team, be there for your fans who want to go out there and root for you night after night. I'm going to give a lot of credit to the Los Angeles Lakers because this past Tuesday they went into an overtime game against the Utah Jazz and they didn't even blink. They all played Wednesday on a crucial back-to-back game. They ended up losing in that one against the Clippers, but how many teams in that scenario would have sat their superstar and said, well, you know, if we're coming off a back-to-back game, we're just not going to play them. How are you getting ready for the postseason in the playoffs if you're not playing guys on a nightly basis?
Let me say this. As a Knicks fan, okay, simply as a Knicks fan, Julius Randle, 77 games. Jalen Brunson, 68. And that's only because of injury. He got hurt. Otherwise, he'd have played more.
Games. Yeah. They play their games.
RJ Barrett, 71. Emmanuel Quickley, 79. Quentin Grimes, 69. Obi Toppin, 65. You know, I give him credit because they're doing it the right way. That, and by the way, you think Tom Thibodeau would ever allow his team to just rest and try this load management garbage? Not a chance. So there's certain franchises that play, and there are others that don't. And it's just, it sends such mixed messages. It's to me why I really do believe this is why a lot of people are turned off by the NBA.
You could be a fan of maybe the NBA postseason, but this is why the NBA will not have any kind of regular season viewership like it wants in the future. If you don't have guys playing on a night-to-night basis, I'll take last night. Here's another great example, Steve. To your point, last night was supposed to be one of the top games between the Suns and the Nuggets to decide a lot of things. And maybe it's just for bragging rights. Maybe it could have set Nikola Jokic over the top for an MVP award. But instead, it was only the Nuggets with their players. The Suns with their players like Kevin Durant and Devin Booker actually playing. Meanwhile, the Nuggets sat most of their guys. For what? Why are you sitting guys ahead of the postseason? You should be kind of gearing up. This should be your last stretch. Everybody, as long as you're not in the play-in tournament, you get a week off anyways. Why would you want an extra week off? You're going to be totally rusty when it's your chance to go out and roll it out.
It's why I would never spend a dime to watch an NBA regular season game. What's the point? Why would you spend hundreds of dollars to possibly show up and realize the people you want to watch are not playing?
You know what? Another frustrating storyline today. So I just reeled off a bad example with the Dallas Mavericks. Well, would you rather be a Mavericks fan right now or a Pelicans fan knowing Zion is also shut down for the rest of the season? Mm-hmm. Like they have, you know, you want to talk load management or being way too cautious or whatever you want to call with a player. Zion Williamson hasn't played since January. And how many games has he actually played in his actual career? It's really sad.
It's terrible. All right. 18 in front of five. We'll come back. We'll wrap up hour number one. Huge second hour. We'll have Andrew Forrest lead us off at 5, and then Kevin Baker, former UTEP women's basketball head coach, who resigned this week, will join us live at 5:20. Want to hear from him as well. Sports Talk continues, 600 ESPN El Paso. So, the Masters is delayed. How about the video of the tall pine trees that started falling near the 17th hole? You see that video?
That was crazy.
It was, Alicia.
Did you see the roots on that tree?
I did. I also am happy and thankful that nobody got hurt, despite the fact that those trees came tumbling down.
Yeah, that was insane. But we were just talking about Let's see if it the play continues tomorrow. But I think so. With their management at Augusta, that thing's going to be picked up by tomorrow.
I don't know. Rain's looking pretty bad right now. I don't know if they're going to be able to play tomorrow.
Yeah, they just did an aerial shot right now on the ESPN coverage. They're running it back on the Masters. So they're showing the old this previous round. By the way, great round by Brooks Koepka out of the LIV Golf Tour League, and he's killing it right now. It looks really bad at Augusta. It's going to be bad all weekend. So we might see some Monday, Tuesday play if the weather continues like this.
Tiger also trying to make the cut line. He was on the projected cut line through the ninth hole, parred 10, and then stayed even at Amen Corner, but then the weather delay came and that was the end of Tiger.
I mean, Tiger's swing looked just great, but it's the walking. I mean, he's using his clubs to get up the hills and stuff. I think it's going to come down to his walking and not so much his swing, because his swing looks pure still.
It does. It does. And he's played well. He, given the circumstances, he really has. Do we know what the weather forecast is for tomorrow?
I'm not sure right now, Steve. I was seeing that over the weekend, there's a lot of thunderstorms at Augusta. So
lovely.
We're going to have to see when they try to pack this in. I'm curious to see if they also do some kind of different kind of like scheduling. But there's 80% chance of rain all the way through tomorrow, like the entire day based on my iPhone app.
We might not be getting much golf tomorrow. That's for sure. Alicia, who else has been impressing you so far? You had a chance to see Koepka.
I did get a chance to see Koepka, but have you seen that amateur Bennett?
I have not.
He is 8-under. He's from Texas A&M. He's a senior, and he's a U.S. amateur champion. But he is 8-under in the Masters. That is insane.
That is insane. That is that's probably close to like borderline historic, given the circumstances. So Sam Bennett is an amateur, as you just heard from Alicia a moment ago. And, wow, what a round. He has been terrific. So goes to A&M. He's 23 years old. Here's the way his second round went. He birdied 1, bogeyed 4, birdied 8, 9, 13, and 14, and parred everything else out to shoot a 68. That's pretty impressive. So he's 4-under today, 4-under yesterday. And how about that? We got an amateur right now at 8-under. That's unbelievable. Have we ever had an amateur win the Masters?
No, there has never been an amateur to win the Masters, and he actually did make history. He is the first amateur to be top 10 after the first round.
Wow, that is awesome.
Man, can you imagine that, just being that age, and you're still in college, you're still representing Texas A&M at some degree, and then you're going and playing at the biggest event in all of golf.
Alicia throwing out some serious stats right now for us.
Yeah, former golfer, former collegiate golfer, Alicia Barón here on the show.
Alicia, what is your favorite local course to play?
I like Horizon. It's just close to my house, and I like Horizon. I also like Lone Star, but I think my game has to be very pure to go play Lone Star. There's too many trees.
I got you. But Horizon is like the perfect course for you.
Yeah, it is. It's very open. It's easy to practice on. I like Horizon.
Oh, nice. By the way, if you like open, nothing's better than Escondite Park. That is like the greatest. You can't lose a golf ball at Escondite. That's the beauty of it, right?
Yeah, I do like Escondite. It just gets a little packed sometimes.
It does.
I like the peace at Horizon.
There you go. Adrian, are you old enough to have ever played Dos Lagos?
Yes. Yes, okay. I was. I played when I was really young. I love that course, Steve. It was so nice. It had a little lake on it, too. It was beautiful. I love that area.
I miss Santa Teresa Country Club, too. I really
never
do.
Played there. I heard it was awesome. I heard it was really cool.
It was great. It was a lot of fun. Listen, I do not have really any time to play golf these days, but I played when I was younger. I still own clubs. I would love to go out and hit balls on occasion. In fact, I like to play in tournaments if the opportunity presents itself. And I miss some of the old courses that I haven't seen in a while, or the old courses that aren't here anymore. Simple as that.
Yeah, even Vista Hills, you hear a lot of that here locally. Yeah, that's why we got to be, fortunate to have the courses that we have right here in El Paso. It's tough to find some good play here locally sometimes.
We've come full circle, haven't we? We started talking about Lubies, and now we're wrapping up the hour talking about golf courses that are no longer around that we wish were still around.
Oh, man, what's next? What else are we going to talk about? Old hamburger places that closed down in town, like Charcoaler when it was about to close down, all the hype around that, and then it's stays up.
Well, it did close. It closed for like 6 months and then reopened.
That's right. Yeah, that's right. And then everybody was really hyped when it when it reopened. But remember when all the lines, like every time you passed by Charcoaler? Every time? Yeah, that was funny.
I was part of that. I think I went to Charcoaler the last week before it closed and then reopened later on.
Yeah, I was pretty bummed that we were going to lose. And then we all forget about it. So it's just that's kind of how it is.
That's true. All right, hour number one coming to a wrap. When we return, Andrew Forrest will join us here inside our 600 ESPN El Paso River Oaks property, Schoolyard Sports Studios, and we'll have an opportunity to talk a little soccer with Andrew. Locomotive FC back tomorrow night with a big home match. We'll get the latest as we continue 600 ESPN El Paso. As we mentioned, it's going to be a busy 5 o'clock hour here on Sports Talk. Welcome back, everybody, along with Adrian Broadus, Alicia Baron with us as well. In our 600 ESPN El Paso control room, I'm Steve Kaplowitz, and we've got a special guest in studio right now. Andrew Forrest is with us right now, general manager of El Paso Locomotive FC, the team with a big one coming up tomorrow night, 7:30 against Orange County SC. First home match in the last three contests. They've been on the road for three, and now they're home for this one. And they don't play again until the 22nd. So a nice break after tomorrow's match. Welcome back. How you doing?
I'm doing great. Thanks again for having me.
Hey, thanks for being here. And it's been an interesting start to the season, to say the least, for Locomotive FC. Sometimes going on the road is good. And I feel like it gave the club a chance to get out of here where they're playing a lot of matches in a very short amount of time. And, you know, you look at those first two road matches, they were able to get themselves a W. They played to a draw. And it seems like a lot of the things that Brian Clairhout was trying to correct are starting to now even itself out.
Yeah, it's a process, right? In these early games, it's not necessarily who's the best soccer team. It's who can find a way to win through various mechanisms. Are you in better shape? Are you more athletic? What does it take to win? I think, you know, the right teams will be where they're supposed to be at the end of the season, but we're at the beginning of the season. So, and definitely being able to get away, maybe get some distractions of being in town to just bond and be together. And to beat Louisville in Louisville 3-0, I'm not sure they've ever taken a defeat in Louisville like that in the last five, six, 7 years, because they are tough to beat anywhere and they're extremely difficult to beat in Louisville. They had gone on the road the first two games to California, three time zones away, and won both of them against California teams. So to get a win and a draw on the road, to build that momentum, to come back home against Orange County, I really am excited to see what we do tomorrow night.
I am too. And I know in between all that, there was a U.S. Open Cup match that didn't go your way. Then again, that's pretty consistent with almost every year. It seems like this is the one thing that, for the most part, the roster is different. You play a lot of kids, and you know, you think about it. It's important because it's the Open Cup, it's pride, but you got your USL Championship schedule too. So it's an interesting balance, isn't it, to try to figure out how to position a game like that into the big picture.
Yeah. I mean, it's difficult, right? Because you go Friday night in Tulsa away, come home Saturday, leave Tuesday, get to Omaha, play Wednesday night, then come back Thursday. Friday we train lightly, and then tomorrow a game. So you have to balance. We missed six consistent starters on purpose in the game on Wednesday, and of course we want to win games in Open Cup and make a run, but it's so difficult when we have to travel and travel so far to try to play these games. And it's a mix of guys that are all good players, but they haven't played much. Some of them haven't played much, and certainly some of them haven't played meaningful minutes together. I mean, we had a player, one of our academy kids on an academy contract, make his pro debut. I mean, that's awesome for Finley, but that's tough to be put into, right?
It is tough to be put into, but like you said, it's good experience.
It's great, yep.
Because this is the future, and who knows? Maybe down the road in a couple of seasons, a guy like that could become a full-time member of the club.
That's certainly the hope. You know, we played Lalito, who's a new signing, just turned 17, if you can believe that. We had Finley O'Brien, who's 17. We had Eric McHugh, who's 20. We had Miles Lyons, who's 20. Both these boys just turned 20. Two of those guys started. Two of them came in off the bench. Like, That you know, I don't know what anyone else was doing at 17, but I know what I wasn't doing, and that was playing in pro soccer games.
Was Luna 16 or 17 when he first arrived?
When Luna showed up here, he was 16, about 16, probably 16 and a half, maybe three quarters, and quickly progressed to 17 and was gone shortly thereafter. But these kids these days they're dedicated, they're unbelievable. Lalito's, his feet and his vision for 17 are when this kid's 19, 20, I mean, we could, I don't want to say it, but we could have another player on our hands that is a massive asset.
Now, are we all talking also not just academy kids? Are these all local products?
So some of these kids are local, and some, for like Finley O'Brien, for example, is an academy on our Elite Academy U20 team. He is actually was in the Columbus Crew Academy, and wasn't getting the playing time. He was doing well. He was the captain of like the U16s, mm-hmm. and then as many of these teams do, they make decisions on kids that are 15, 16 years old, and he was just out. Good player, young. And he's just out, and we were able to bring him in. So we've mixed one Inter Miami product, one Columbus Crew product. Then the rest of our U20s are all local. Lalito is signed to a first-team contract. He's a full pro, like Diego Luna signed a full-team contract. He's from the Houston Dynamo Academy. Eric McHugh, who I mentioned earlier, was part of Houston Dynamo and DC United Academy. So we're starting to get that mix, our extreme local talent with some national talent, and it's melding really well. It's got a ways to go, but we're starting to reap the rewards a little bit already.
How big is the academy when you look at how many different teams do you have, age groups? How deep are we getting with the academy right now?
Yeah, so we're U13 to U17 with the academy, and then there's the U20s, which is the super team where you could be 15 or you could be 19 or 20. It's all about who are the best players in El Paso. And I believe we have around – it's floating roster, but around 22, 24, and all but two of them are local.
Wow.
And you know, again, we sent three teams to Dallas Cup this week. We're in two national – I've said this many times. We're in two national leagues. We're looking at other national leagues. We're getting admitted to Manchester City Cup in California, Surf Cup. We're getting national attention for the last, call it 2 years of playing high-level games and beating teams that are already on the national stage.
We've said this before, Andrew. A lot of us believe that the quality of young soccer talent in El Paso gets overlooked at times. I mean, just look at all the high school teams and how deep their state tournament runs go. We've had multiple state champions. San Elie's in the middle of a dynasty right now with their club, and it's fun to watch. And you know, with all the attention football gets because it's Texas and it's Texas football, soccer does extremely well here with the youngsters, whether it's boys, girls, doesn't matter. There's a lot of really good soccer talent in El Paso.
Texas is rated, certainly, in Austin and Dallas are usually on the top of that list. But I think El Paso definitely has the respect of the right people in the right places across the country. Austin FC, FC Dallas, Real Salt Lake, this is an unclaimed MLS territory, which means that anybody can hunt here. There are teams that absolutely come down here to try to sniff out what's going on and see who might be available. And it's not a... You know, we want the best for our kids, we want the best for El Paso kids, whether they're with our club or with another club. But at the same time, you know, we need to balance trying to find a pathway for the kids that are in our club versus, hey, this is a better opportunity if you go to MLS Team X. We support that as well. So we're just trying to do what we can to help develop the next generation of talent because there is so much talent here. And trying to identify it and send it to the next place, whether that's college, pro team, developmental academy, whatever it might be, it's great for the city, and it's a great story nationally in the soccer landscape.
And who's helping to run those programs for you? Who do you have right now that's running the show?
Yeah, so we brought two really great guys in. Happened to be from Virginia by way of Hungary. Ivan Militar, who runs our academy, and then Colin Herlinger, who runs our clubs and programs. These two guys, young guys that both have A licenses. You know, advanced degrees. These guys are the new generation of soccer coach. They're administratively savvy, but they're also great on the field coaching. Ivan coaches the U20s, Colin coaches the U16s, and these are two of the teams these two teams have had a ton of success, both locally, regionally, and nationally. So these are the guys that are going to help develop the strategy, the philosophy of what we want this club to be, and then help that instill that we have great local coaches, and it trickles down, and it'll take a little time, but hopefully we see the bar raise in this town and the structure gets a little bit better and we want to help the other local clubs in town. And I'd be remiss if I wasn't scrolling Twitter earlier. And I did see our eighth notch friend, Larry Durbin, Eastlake was up 1-0, which is a testament to the high school prowess here in town playing the big boys from the other four big cities.
Andrew Forrest with us right now, general manager. I'll pass the Locomotive FC tomorrow night. It'll be Orange County SC. This is a club that finds themselves a 10th out of 12 in the Western Conference table. However, they have had three consecutive draws. It's important to mention that of their four matches, three of them have been draws. So Tampa Bay, which was a big 1-1 draw a few weeks ago. Then they followed that up with Las Vegas. And after that, it was Hartford Athletic. So, once again, you know, Tampa Bay's down right now. Yeah. They're traditionally pretty solid. Hartford also kind of in that same boat. But, you know, Orange County usually comes here and they give a pretty good fight, don't they?
Yeah, Orange County, I actually looked at our stats against them. We're basically even. I think it's like two wins for each and a draw for each or something like that over the course of time. I remember asking Mark Lowry in year one or year two, and I was like, oh, we're going away to RGV. I was like, oh, that'll be an easy one. And he looked at me, he's like, there are no easy games. And it's true. Am I confident that we can get points in this game? Of course I am. I know we can get 3 points. However, Orange County's not going to give them to us. So it's going to be difficult, but I think it can be done.
I think also for a lot of fans, they want to see a dub here at home because those first Absolutely. Three matches were tough. We talked about playing three in about a week span. Didn't really get a chance to regroup. That was something you did on the road. But this city is wanting to just start celebrating wins, and they'll have a chance to do that here tomorrow night.
Of course. We always want to win at home. Our fans are so excellent. We do so well in attendance overall in the league in some major markets. You know, we've got great supporters. We've got great season ticket base. We've got great people that come out and watch. And we want nothing more than to give them a win. The players literally die for it. The coaches always want that. So we're confident that we can deliver that tomorrow. But winning at home is what it's all about.
Is it also nice and you can give something to the fans that tomorrow night they get the free bucket hat? That's the big giveaway.
Yeah, and it's nice to be able to come on here and talk a little bit more than you know the quick hits on TV sometimes. This is probably, outside of maybe the jersey giveaways that we do, this is the most talked about and sought. I've been approached about this more than any other giveaway we've done in the 5 year history. This, for whatever reason, and I'm not fashion forward, so I don't know if bucket hats are cool or not. But
they are. They are.
But
cool.
They seem to be because everybody yes. wants this. So I think if you want one, you need to show up early.
First
1500 through the gates. We'll get a bucket hat, and I think we've put them out on social quite a bit. They are using our tertiary Sugar Skull logo, which is awesome. So it's a good-looking hat, and you know, we're excited to get those out and see those in the crowd.
Adrian, you've seen those bucket hats. We're bucket hat fans around here, aren't we?
We definitely are. I own my own Chihuahua's bucket hat, so I need my Locomotive bucket hat too. So this is awesome. I love the logo. The logo itself is so cool. I love the kind of the Noche Latina continuation that Locomotive FC uses.
Yeah, we took the traditional Sugar Skull, which is, you know, is all over the place in various different formats, but we incorporated some of our elements. The Mountain Star, we inverted the cow catching part of the train to kind of make it our own and trademark that, and we like it. And you know, I guess I'm probably fashion backwards. I need to maybe get a bucket hat collection going.
You could start tomorrow night. There you go.
One, yeah.
Orange County SC, 7:30 kick. Gates open at 6:30 tomorrow night.
6:30, and for those that you know, we welcome back. Andrew Fox, who was here for 4 years and was a great player for us, and he went to Orange County, and you know, we'll welcome him back for 90 minutes. We will not, but before and after, we'll appreciate him being back in town.
Pittsburgh Riverhounds will be in town 2 weeks from tomorrow on the 22nd, and then the club goes on the road the following 2 weeks for San Diego and Colorado Springs. Looking forward to tomorrow night. Should be a lot of fun. Again, Orange County SC, it's the free bucket hat giveaway to the first 1,500 fans. Get out there, and let's see a big W. We're looking forward to getting this club going, and things are trending in the right direction right now, and looking forward to tomorrow night, Andrew.
Awesome. Thanks so much again, Steve, for having me.
You got it. Andrew Forrest, unfortunately, we don't have time to talk Knicks playoff basketball. We'll do that next time. We've got him in our studios, but we will be talking hoops with Kevin Baker, former UTEP women's head coach. We'll do that coming up right after Charlie One, who's back with this traffic update. All right, 20 past the hour as we keep things moving here on Sports Talk. Earlier this week, we received word that UTEP women's head basketball coach Kevin Baker was stepping down from his post after six seasons with the team, And he's joining us live on the phones right now as we continue here on Sports Talk. Coach, first off, you know, hard to believe we had you on for the first time back in 2017 when you first came on board here at UTEP. But we really do appreciate you taking a little time out and joining us on the show today.
Yeah, time flies, doesn't it? Can you believe that? It feels like it was just yesterday I made my first appearance on your show. And wow, 6 years later, look where we are.
I know.
I'm flat.
It really does. I'll be the first to tell you that the news when we heard about you stepping down caught us by surprise. It pretty much took everybody in El Paso by surprise. Nobody could see this coming. First and foremost, how long were you really thinking about this before you ultimately came to this decision this week?
I've actually been thinking about it for a long time, and what has prolonged the decision was my love for UTEP and my love for the city of El Paso. I did not really want to leave it. It's just one of those things where I did a little bit of soul searching and decided that if there was ever a good time, and I'm not sure this is a good time, but if there was ever a good time, maybe this would be a decent time to step away, take a look at some other things, and you know, quite frankly, I'm pulling for Todd Buchanan. You know, I'm hoping that my associate head coach becomes the head coach, and I hope that we had enough success this year where our UTEP administration will take a good hard look at him and elevate him into the head coaching role, which would make me feel a whole lot better. But either way, the future is bright for UTEP women's basketball. We've got great returners, and I just wanted to make sure that when I left it in a better place than when I found it. The cupboard is full. We've got a lot of great players and more coming. So it just felt like the right time to step away. I could feel good about stepping away. We accomplished a lot, and we left the program in a really good position.
2 years ago, Rodney Terry stepped away from the men's program with 3 years left on his contract to take an assistant job at Texas for Chris Beard, and we obviously all know how that story has turned out a couple of years later. Immediately, people were thinking, uh-oh, Coach Baker is resigning because he's got another spot he's looking to go to and probably going to take a similar type of jump.
Well, you know, that hasn't really been in my thoughts very much. You know, when I said I wanted to step away from the game, that's ultimately what I really want to do. And I think, you know, I've had a lot of people reach out to me in the last 24 hours. There's been a lot of people that have, different colleges, different universities that have reached out the last, my gosh, since 11 o'clock the other day when I resigned. You know, a lot of people have reached out, and it's flattering. And, you know, there's been some good sales pitches along the way. But, you know, I'm not really – that's not where my head is right now. I'm sure I'm going to have some opportunities. There's no doubt about that. But it's just one of those things where right now my head is just sort of in a different place. I'm looking at a lot of different things, and we'll see what happens.
In your quote in the release from a couple of days ago, you mentioned that you want to spend more time near family. And I want to talk to you about that because I know for you, your parents are a big part of your life. You've talked about them quite a bit during coaches' shows that we've had in the past with you. They live out in that Central Texas area. And I'm sure for you, the last 6 years have been tough because even though you're in the same state, you're nowhere near, you're not a quick drive away. It makes things a little more difficult for you. So tell me a little bit about that and about really, you know, the family aspect for you.
Well, look, full disclosure, I'm an honest person. You know, if my parents were not in the picture, I'd still be the head coach at UTEP. I mean, that's just how it is. But they are in the picture. They are alive and well and living their lives. And I do need to be a little bit more accessible to them as they hit their early 80s. They sort of need that without ever having admitting that. I think they would object loudly if they heard this radio interview. But the fact of the matter is, you know, I need to be accessible to them, and that's what I'm going to do. So whatever happens with me in the future, that will be my focus. That will be where my intent lies. You know, if you know, if it was a perfect world, I would be the head coach at UTEP for the next 20 years. But that's not how my life is working right now. So I've got to follow another path, and it's unfortunate, but, you know, I feel good about it. I think it's, you know, your parents, as you grow up and they raise you, they do so much for you. And, you know, sometimes it's the proper time to give back a little bit, and that's what I plan to do.
Coach, throughout the week, we were all reflecting on one of your comments also in the release, talking about your success throughout the high school ranks, but all, you know, in the 3A, the 4A, the 5A, 6A ranks, and then you look at the D3, D2, and the Division I level at college. What has that meant to you to coach at all these different levels and have success at them?
Well, you know, I really appreciate the question, because it's the number one thing. If I never coach another game, it's the number one thing that I'm the most proud of. I really don't think many coaches came up the way that I did. I knew for me, in order to elevate my career, I was going to have to win at every stop. 3A, 4A, 5A, 6A. I knew if I was going to elevate, I had to win. So I put a lot of pressure on myself to win and elevate. I got to the 6A level, and I thought, well, what's next? College has got to be next. So I dove into that, Division III, Division II, and then, of course, Division I at UTEP. And, they say you're most proud when you're in your rocking chair and you're looking back over your career. And for sure, as I look back, that is something that I'm so proud of. I don't really know anybody who came up that way. A lot of work. A lot of sacrifice, but I can tell you it's been worth it. Every step along the way, it really has been worth it.
Kevin Baker joining us here on Sports Talk as we continue to talk to the UTEP women's basketball coach, who earlier this week stepped down. So we've talked about all the things you said in the release. I'm going to bring one more up there right now. You said that you were proud that you did things the right way at UTEP. And then you said, we followed the rules of NCAA compliance. Let's go with that, because the NIL world has changed everything. We all know it's changed everything. You've joined us on this program the last couple of seasons, and you vented a little bit, and I don't blame you. I think that fans would probably have that same feeling like you've had. You came up in this business, and college coaching was a lot different than it is now. But with NIL, the way it is, and how we've seen the transfer portal growing, is it hard to have the same passion for coaching the game, knowing the makeup and roster is so different now than it was when you first started?
Absolutely, and that's why I said what I said in the release. I'm not really all that proud of collegiate athletics anymore. I'm not. With the advent of the portal, allowing kids to quit because it's cool, I'm not for that, obviously. And I'm not for paying players. And that's what we do now. We pay players. It's legal. And we let them quit with no consequence. And I just think that those are two things I really don't want to be a part of. And I've made that known to a lot of people. I've made that known when I left the other day. I'm just not proud of collegiate sports, and if that's the direction that we're going, I'm not sure I'm a great fit for college basketball anymore. Because I'm a relationship person. I want to develop a relationship with young people. I want to help them be better than they can be, and I don't think that quitting is the cool thing to do just so you can be king of Twitter for 24 hours. And that's what kids are doing these days, and we're paying players to get them to come to our school. And I'm still of a traditional belief that a college scholarship is plenty. I'm still of a traditional belief that a college scholarship is enough, and it's more than most people get. So I don't go against the new regime of things in college sports, and that we've got to pay players because it's somehow fair. I'm against all of that. I don't believe in any of it. And, it hurts my soul. I remember when college athletics was a pure sport and a pure thing, at least to the people that did it the right way. And I'm very, very proud that, it was difficult to do, but we always did it the right way. We followed the rules. We didn't break compliance rules, and we did it the right way. We graduated our players, and I can lay my head on the pillow at night and be proud of that.
More with Kevin Baker as we continue here with the longtime UTEP women's basketball head coach. But first, let's go to Adrian. He's standing by and has a bottom-of-the-hour SportsCenter update. Adrian, thank you very much. Kevin Baker joins us here on Sports Talk. He leaves UTEP with a record of 93-85, a 51-55 mark in Conference USA, 93 wins, third in program history. He also took UTEP to a pair of CUSA tournament semifinals, both in 2021 and this past season as well. You've said some really, really candid things, and I appreciate that. That's one thing I've always loved about you. You've always told us what's on your mind, and you don't shy away from it, which I think is also really important. As you've developed relationships with your players over the years here, and you know, you've seen them grow, the relationship you've had with the fans, and especially your fans in the community of El Paso, I noticed that bond. And I've always said that to me, UTEP women's basketball fans are about as loyal as anybody you'll see around college basketball.
Yeah, and quite honestly, they are the reason for the awesomeness, I guess, of lack of a better word, of our program. You know, it is the absolute most loyal fan base I've ever been around. I had a friend of mine ask me about it the other day, and I said, well, they're unconditional. They want you to win, but they love you anyway. And I don't know many places in college sports where your fan base loves you win, lose, or draw. You know, usually college sports fans are very fair-weathered, and they love you if they win. And they're ready to get rid of you if you lose. And I never felt that way at UTEP. But from the moment I got to El Paso, they welcomed me with open arms. We had a couple of down years with a lot of injuries and a lot of adversity. They still loved us. They still supported us. They still filled the Haskins Center. And, you know, they believed in us. And that's the neat thing about it. And I know that's the thing that the next head coach at UTEP is going to enjoy more than anything else, is the support that you just don't get at other places. And, you know, the city of El Paso loves UTEP. And I think that's the thing that I'm going to take away from all of this when I look back 20 years from now, is the love that the city has for women's basketball at UTEP.
Well put. J.D. Aziz tweets the show, just shocked with this Coach Baker resignation. He is well-regarded and respected in El Paso. We wish him the very best. If I see him at an airport, I am so asking for a selfie. Well, there you go. You might be getting plenty of those requests over the you know, months and years to come. Esteban tweets the show that he agrees with your comments 100% concerning NIL, and that's also important. I think a lot of us do. We understand the business and how it's changed the game and how it really hasn't changed the game for the better in a lot of ways. So we totally get that as well. You've mentioned searching for a new career path. Do you think you want to stay in the sport of basketball at any level, maybe coaching youngsters? Do you want to get completely out of it? And if so, what are some of the other jobs and things in life that maybe interest you a little bit?
Well, I think that's the thing that's scaring me a little bit, scaring me in a good way. You know, I have a fear that I've never felt. I'm 50 years old. I started coaching basketball when I was 21. It's the only thing I ever wanted to do. So now as I look for a new career path, I'm a little fearful. I don't know what's next. I don't have any idea what I'm going to do. I hate that part of it, but it's also exciting in a way too. Because, you know, I just want to dive into something. I want to give my heart and soul to whatever I do next. Just the same way I gave to college basketball. I want to give my heart and soul to the next career, the same way I did with basketball. And I already miss it. I already, you know, wish I was still at UTEP, wish I was still coaching our kids. I love our team. But, you know, it felt good because I knew in my heart I was doing the right thing. And this allowed UTEP to look forward and find a new coach. This allowed the kids to kind of take it all in and understand what was going on around them. And it allowed my staff to be able to look for jobs if they need to. So as much as I wanted to stay on a little bit longer, this was the right decision. And I feel like a little bit of a gypsy now. I'm wandering the world trying to figure out what's next.
Coach, I'm reflecting on this year. I was really impressed by this past season. I think we got to see a new part of you that we hadn't got to see before. Very emotional and, you know, fiery at times. I reflect back on wins against number 21 Middle Tennessee at home, something that the program had never done, knocking off a top 25 opponent, in which you did back in February, and then reaching the WNIT and going out to Texas Tech and kind of going wire to wire against the Red Raiders, which was a really good basketball team. What was this year like, knowing that it all culminated into this season and then finished out in the postseason where your team ended up in the WNIT?
Yeah, you know, I think hindsight being 2020, I think the reason for showing the emotion and, you know, showing a display of emotion, I guess is the best way to put it, I knew this was going to be my last year, you know, deep down inside. The direction of college sports, and I knew in my heart that this was probably going to be it. And I think that's why you saw so much emotion from me. Even now talking about it, I get emotional. You know, coaching against Krista at Texas Tech in the WNIT was very, very difficult for me, coaching against one of my very, very best friends, and also knowing in the back of my mind that this is probably the last game I'm ever going to coach in my life. And, so, yeah, I had that. And, you know, obviously the competitive side of wanting to beat one of the top programs in the country, that was very important to me as well. And I just thought it was good for our program and our team and our city to be able to knock off a class program like Middle Tennessee.
More tweets coming in. Ed McDonald tweets, "I'm blown away by Coach Baker's profoundness. It's moved from education and development to collegiate capitalism. Thanks, Coach. You left UTEP ready to fly." And that was from Ed McDonald, Minor Eddie Mack, for us on Twitter. At the start of this conversation, you endorsed Todd Buchanan. He's been your associate head coach for a number of years. He's been with you for a good part of the journey. Number one, have you spoken to Todd? Is he interested in pursuing this job here at UTEP? And if so, what is it that you believe will make him an ideal replacement for you in the program?
Absolutely. Todd and I talk every day still, and we'll always talk and communicate. And, you know, Todd's just an unbelievable human being. And if you take basketball acumen and strategy and ability to coach, and you took that all out of the picture and said none of that mattered, of course, all of it does, but none of it mattered. He's just a great human being who's great with people. He's great with young people. And quite honestly, he deserves this. You know, he was the head coach at the University of Houston, and he sort of got a raw deal that he did not deserve there. And, you know, I've done everything in my power to help Todd become a head coach again because I think he deserves it. I think he'd be great at it. And, you know, I hope it happens at UTEP. I really do. But if it doesn't happen there, I'm really, my fingers are crossed and my prayers are up that he gets another opportunity. And that's all in the world he really wants, is an opportunity. And, you know, I'm pulling for him. He's just a great guy. I think anybody that knows him knows he would do a good job here at UTEP. And I would certainly, you know, I've gone to bat for him, and I will until they make a decision. I know Jim Center and the administration there at UTEP has a tough decision in front of them. These things are never easy. But I'm pulling for Todd. He's a good man, and I want good things to happen to good people.
Let's wrap it up with this, Coach. Six seasons here at UTEP. You had a lot of memories, but what's going to be the number one thing you take away from your time here in El Paso?
Gosh, just the relationships with the players through the years. I got to coach some really, really great quality young women in my time at UTEP. You know, you look at Katarina Zetch, you look at Ariana Gill, you look at Nnedi Okwani. I mean, I could go down the line. Avery Krause is probably the best kid I've ever coached in my entire life. I mean, it's just, I was just so, so fortunate. And I can tell you this, that every single day that I drove to work, every single day that I drove to work, I was proud to be the head coach at UTEP. And And I really still feel that way. I have such a sense of pride and such a sense of honor that they let me run the program for 6 years. And I am just so filled with joy that I had the opportunity. It just makes me so happy to know that the people believed in me enough to let me run their program. And the relationships with the players and the relationships with the fans are the things that I'll obviously remember the most.
Coach, we can tell you're emotional, and deservedly yeah. so. Listen, for us, it's been a real pleasure. We've aired the broadcasts over the years. We've had you on. We've done coaches' shows. We've done a lot of great things with you. We appreciate all you've given us and the community. And keep that cell phone. Don't change your numbers so we can keep tabs and have you back on the show here down the road.
Well, hey, Steve, Adrian, you guys are the best. And thank you for all you guys do for UTEP sports and sports in the area. You guys really keep the thing going, and you guys really, really work hard to keep sports on the forefront of our minds there in the borderland. I really appreciate it as a fan. I appreciate it as a coach. And please keep doing what you're doing.
We will. Kevin, best of luck, and we'll look forward to the next time we get to run into you.
Sounds good. Y'all have a good one. Thanks.
You too. Kevin Baker, folks, head coach of the UTEP women's basketball team. All right, 43 past the hour. When we return, we'll wrap up hour two. Look ahead to our third and final hour. More of your phone calls and comments next. The Sports Talk continues right here, 600 ESPN El Paso. 10 in front of 6 as we continue here on Sports Talk. Back to the phones we go, 505-6009. Let's welcome Daniel to the program. Daniel, how are you?
I'm doing good. Happy Good Friday and happy Easter, Steve.
Hey, happy Good Friday and Easter to you as well, Daniel. Absolutely.
I was telling Adrian, I seen a very disturbing story that makes me and hockey fans in El Paso very upset. They say there's a good chance the Rhino Rink might be tore down.
That's correct. It's all part of discussion for expanding the Bridge of the Americas land port of entry. And if this happens and there's talks to start expanding it in 2027, which would be 4 years from now, that would ultimately either A, just demolish the rink altogether, because I think the Coliseum as well as the event center would be bulldozed in that discussion in two of the three plans. And in the third, the event center and Coliseum would stay, but they would not be able to expand the rink and add another sheet of ice, which is something that they are looking to do as well. So, and they wanted to do that within the next 2 years. So this is a biggie because you're right. I mean, hockey's been around in El Paso, ice hockey, since the late 90s with the Buzzards. The Rhinos have been very, very successful. And it's hard to believe that all of that would go away if they decide to expand the bridge.
What about a new rink?
I mean, I don't think that happens. It's possible that if they ever do build a new arena downtown, no matter what size that is, that there could be a rink going in there if in fact it was to go away. That could possibly be an option, but again, the difference there is that you know, the Rhinos and the El Paso Hockey Association have always worked with the county. This time around, they would have to work with the city, which they have no relationship with. So first off, we don't have a downtown arena yet. We might never get a downtown arena, and if they lose the Coliseum, then that would be the end of it altogether.
That's heartbreaking.
I don't blame you, and I'm with you. I mean, I called Buzzards Hockey since year one. So, yeah, and Duke, same thing. So many of us, even Kevin, who she's in charge of our three radio stations, he plays hockey. He plays in the adult league that they have out there at the event center and is a huge hockey fan and was there on the mic with Duke when we had the Stars and the Coyotes in town a few years ago for Hockey Town. So I'm telling you, I don't blame you. It is disturbing and it's concerning, And it's something that I hope, you know, the people that do want to save the rink and do want to get behind this, I hope they make their voices heard, just like they did for Kraft Hockeyville a few years ago.
You know, like you said, once El Paso gets something successful, something happens to make it go away. That's just heartbreaking.
Well, let's say this. It hasn't happened yet. Let's not bury this all of a sudden. There's still a lot that has to happen, and I'm hoping that you know it will continue to have those facilities there. I'm hoping they can add that second rink, and you know they'll find a way to keep this thing going.
Okay, well, thank you for the call and your time, Steve.
Well, you're the one that called in, Daniel. Thank you for the call and putting that on the show. I think it's a great topic and definitely something we're going to dive into more here in the days to come. That's for sure. All right, 2 hours in the books. When we come back, we have one more hour to go. We'd love to get more phone calls. 505-6009. Sports Talk continues right here, 600 ESPN El Paso. Back here, final hour of Sports Talk. Welcome back, everybody. Along with Adrian Broaddus, Alicia Barón, Steve Kaplowitz with you. Good to have you here. 600 ESPN El Paso. 505-6009. That is our telephone number. So Daniel called last hour. I need to probably give a little more context into what he was discussing. Okay, so let me do my best to try and explain this. So, once again, this, I guess, started a few months back, but recently there has been discussion of expanding the Bridge of the Americas land port of entry. This was Tuesday night on the 4th, there was a stakeholder meeting explaining the three plans to expand the bridge starting in 2027. Two of the three options include demolishing the rink. The third alternative entails property removal that would prevent the Rhinos and El Paso Hockey Association from expanding. Now, since 2021, the EPHA and the Rhinos have been finalizing plans to add another sheet of ice within 2 years. Any version of the bridge expansion proposal would end all plans to expand the rink and add another sheet of ice. Other stakeholders expressed concern about increased pollution, destruction of the surrounding neighborhood, and the absence of plans to relocate or compensate those affected by the expansion. Now, the talks are preliminary, but what they're trying to do is get people to email in a comment form to a website, which is daniel.partida@gsa.gov. And the form essentially asks you to explain why the rink is important to the community and why they want people to keep the rink. Now, here is what's interesting, okay? Number one, the rink in El Paso is the only rink between Odessa and Albuquerque that's open year-round. Two, the rink welcomes 20,000 people a week through youth hockey, adult hockey, high school hockey, figure skating, public skating, free school field trips, and Rhino games. There are over 500 players in 5 youth hockey programs, 200 figure skaters in 2 figure skating programs, and over 200 adult players. Plus, the rink is home to 2 junior hockey teams in the North America Hockey League and North America 3 Hockey League. Both of them are USA Hockey sanctioned leagues, which include players from all over the world. Adrian, it is disturbing because from what I understand, if the rink is gone, the Coliseum will also be gone. And I've never understood why expanding the port of entry will be a good thing, because all that's going to do is put even more cars there, which will increase the traffic levels. And if you think the lines are bad now, just wait till you see the lines once they expand it and more cars try to get through.
Yeah, because the first thing I think of is commercial for all of this. It's more commercial vehicles, more 18-wheelers crossing over, at least in my head. Maybe that's an ignorant thought, but and maybe somebody else would tell me otherwise. But regardless, one of the things that I would reference by El Paso County Judge Ricardo Samaniego is the fact that he said, quote, "We keep hearing that this is in the footprint, but they have not verified that or whether there is some kind of flexibility." So I want to hold true to those kind of words right there. And, you know, he was talking about how things are a little vague, a little generic right now coming from this proposal. I would also want to note that, you know, some more, not to, you know, continue to add more gasoline here to this, but Tyler Deloche, we've had her on many different times here on this show to talk Rhinos hockey and Rhinos sports. She was saying that because of the El Paso Rhinos were awarded by Hockeyville, the $150,000, they could lose that because that was an investment in the building. And if the building is not there, the money goes with it.
Wow. Yeah, that's true. That's exactly right. You fix up the rink, you make it what it is now, and that's true. If the building goes, all the improvements go. You don't get that money back because it was all put into the arena. It was all put into the event center. So that's a good point, too. And, you know, it's something I don't want to see. Look, let me say this. I just think it's really important to state this, okay? Number one, hockey is a niche sport. It's not cheap, but it's also not a sport that everybody plays around here. But having been involved for 25 years since the Buzzards first launched and being a part of that, seeing how much Duke Keith is a part of that, with his life, and watching what Corey Herman was able to do along with his brothers and Corey Heon long after the Buzzards left and turning it into a successful youth program. And now with the NA teams and the Rhinos competing for USA Hockey, plus the adults and everything else that's on board with it, the figure skating, the opportunity to have an ice rink 12 months out of the year. It's a big deal. I don't want to see that go away. I really don't. And they've done very good things around here. And if they're going to put a second sheet of ice in and try to grow it even more, that's another really good thing. So, you know, as far as I'm concerned, again, it's I just don't see the benefit if you're trying to increase the port of entry, knowing that with more cars will come more congestion. You can't tell me that you're going to alleviate traffic. I just think that what's going to happen is more cars will come and you'll have more traffic. It's as simple as that.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, again, another port means more money that other businesses can make. So they send more people out there for commercial travel and international travel in that regard as well. So that would just tell me, hey, our production time can go faster for some of these companies. Maybe they'd elect to have more people go and travel through the border from time and time again. So yeah, more congestion if that's the case. With all that being said, I don't know, Steve. I think there's a lot of uncertainty right here. I feel for everybody out there for the El Paso Rhinos and the El Paso ice skating. I really would also like to say this employs a lot of people. This there are a lot of fans who just love hockey in the city of El Paso, and I hope there's some kind of solution to this. There should not be an ending here with this whole story.
And it sounds like they would go through neighborhoods, residential neighborhoods,
yes.
And you also wonder what will happen there too. So there's a lot of things going on here, a lot happening. So
$700 million as well. I mean, with this proposal. So
wow.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's go to the phones. Dan's going to join us to kick off hour three here on Sports Talk. Dan, thanks for the call. How are you?
I am well, Steve. I have a comment on the ice rink and everything.
Yes.
First of all, and of course, I kind of researched some of it already. This is not the city or the state. This is coming from the federal government. So therefore, to beat the federal government is going to be hard. It is like a $700 million project. The Mexican side is really for it, and they're pushing on it simply because, and this is a point from the people that crossed the bridge. Now most of the traffic during that free bridge is trucks. So what the federal government wants to do is just expand it or make another bridge where it will be just commercial, just trucks. That's it.
So cars will have their lanes, and then the trucks will have their own separate lane.
No, no. The new bridge is supposed to be just the trucks, the semis, and the bridge will convert to what it was originally done for back 60 years ago, which was just cars, because at that time there was no maquilas and none of this trade. So the government wants to make the bridge just for commercial purposes only. No cars, just the trucks.
So in other words, if they expand this, so people will not be able to cross it anymore. Only commercial vehicles.
Only commercials, and then the existing bridge, which will still stand, that's going to be for people and cars.
Got it. So that's what I mean. So they would create a new bridge just for commercial, and then the current bridge would be for the cars themselves and the people. Okay.
Correct. Now I have several questions. Isn't it the Coliseum a historical building? Yeah, wasn't it designated? Because they talked about this, tearing it down, 15 years ago or something like that, and they didn't. You know, that's why they remodeled it and everything.
I'm not sure if the Coliseum is considered a historical building, because if it was, I don't think they would be able to do what they're about to do, right?
Well, see, it's only on the planning stages on both sides of the border, but I'm telling you what, the Mexican side, just reading their newspapers and their everything, or listening to their news, I mean, the people are all for it. I mean, because they're saying, hey, the bridge of the Americas was made for crossing for people, and all of a sudden you started taking it away little by little and allowing trucks. We wanted that, which, you know, I can understand that. Now, another question that I have for you, with Coach Baker, with the women's basketball coach, and I don't know if you can answer it or even want to touch it, but I spoke with somebody, and they wrote an article, and I don't remember where it was. If it was in the Prospector or the one that you write for, the El Paso Inc., but that when Baker got here to El Paso within a month, he was looking to jump ship and go somewhere else. Now, I don't know if that's true. That's why I'm asking you. But you know what? I'm going to come in, and I hope it's not just lip service, because I feel the same way. The scholarship is enough pay for an athlete. I mean, paying for an athlete to come and play, you know, that's wrong, Steve, because with a scholarship, the kid is getting his education paid, and like you said, that's more than what most of the people, not only in El Paso, but in the whole USA, get, and these guys get a free ride. I understand they don't give you money on a scholarship for things like entertainment, for soap, or little things like that. But we all know that they're boosters, and somehow every athlete has always gotten, you know, a couple of 20s, a couple of 50s here and there to take care of that. I mean, the most expensive thing is getting an education, and this guy's getting a free education. Wow, I would have to say 80% of the population in America don't even get that chance. So to me, that's payment enough.
Now, let me say this. Let me say this, yes, okay? There's a lot of things about it. First off, I do feel that universities profit off the likeness of their athletes, and in a big way. And some of these schools make millions and millions and millions of dollars off their athletes. Mm-hmm. And I feel like besides just getting the education, there needs to be some other way to compensate them for their likeness. And granted, you know, you're seeing guys now that are in TV commercials, you know, they're not getting paid tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands of dollars, but if they're making, you know, a couple hundred bucks here and there, I'm happy for them. They're on those commercials. It's their likeness. They deserve to be there. I will say, as far as Baker goes, you might be referring to what happened at the end of year one or year two. I forget what season it was, but he was up for a Texas Tech job a few years ago, and he didn't get it, but there was talk that Texas Tech was seriously looking at Kevin Baker because he had ties to the director of athletics at the time, based on where he was prior to UTEP and had that relationship. I can't recall all the details, Adrian, if it was after the first or second season, but I do remember that Texas Tech at one point was interested in Kevin Baker.
Yeah, I believe it was after the first season and after that first year. I know that they were kind of they weren't the greatest, right? But there was a lot of speculation that after year two, he could possibly look elsewhere. But no, he didn't after those 2 years. A little early in his career at that point, but I do remember this happening, him being linked to that job.
Okay, and you know what he mentioned also, which I kind of disagree. He said he left the program better than when he got it. I think when he got the job, he replaced Kisa, right? And she left the program in a good way, in my opinion. So I think that while he didn't crash the car, the program is as equal as when Kisa left. So I don't think it's better. I mean, I'm not demeaning the guy. He did a lot. I saw him in the community. I mean, the girls did not go into the stands like when Kisa was here and everything. But, you know, everybody has a different personality, and I understand that. But for
Dan, they still go into the stands. I'm at the games. They still go into the stands. And by the way, just to refresh your memory, Kisa's last year at UTEP, they went 8-20. They went 8-23. Okay.
Yeah, it was a bad year.
It was a bad year. The year before, she went to the WNIT quarters, but
she had a
down year. Then she went to Wichita State. So the truth is, ultimately, yes, based on record, you know, he left them on a season when they won 20 games and went to the WNIT. He arrived coming off an 8-win season. So truthfully, he did leave them in better shape than when he got it.
But overall, I mean, when somebody says I left the program in a better way than when I found it, in my mind, it goes saying that the whole years that he was here, and he also had a couple of awful years.
He had a couple clunkers. There's no doubt about it. I agree with that, too. Mm-hmm. I do. Mm-hmm. So, yep,
but,
absolutely.
But, yeah, okay. But, you know, good luck to him. And if that came really truly from the heart, that he doesn't believe in paying athletes and the scholarship is enough, I'm on board with him. And hopefully it is true, and I wish him the best in whatever he does. Maybe being close to his dad, he could get a high school coaching job because, you know, he was at Angelo State before coming to UTEP, and he was known in that area in Texas that he was a great coach. And you know, for him to jump, there's not many high school coaches that are able to jump even to a Division II that Angelo State was.
That's true.
And be successful. So,
that's very
true. You know, kudos to him. Okay, Steve, thanks, man.
Appreciate you, Dan. Have a good weekend. Happy Easter. Thanks for the phone call. As we continue, 18 past the hour. I don't know. I mean, from the conversation we had with Kevin Baker last hour, Adrian, it doesn't sound like he really wants to stay in basketball. It sounds like he wants to get out completely and just try something totally different.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if Kevin Baker got outside his comfort zone and embarked on a new job possibility that is totally away from the sport of basketball, or maybe sports in general. Maybe he sticks with education. He has ties and he has roots in education. Maybe he becomes a teacher again. Could go maybe in administrative work. Who knows?
I could see him in a sales job. He's good.
Yeah.
He sold that program pretty well over the years. I think he would do a pretty good job selling whatever he wants. You know that?
Yeah, and any kind of leadership role. I mean, he's a leader. So,
absolutely.
Yeah,
absolutely. I'm with you. 18 past as sports talk continues. Let's go to Charlie 1 for traffic. We'll come. Oh, no Charlie. No Charlie today. We'll come back more in a moment right here. 600 ESPN El Paso.